You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Sydney Foreman. This is the WFHB local news for Wednesday, October 28th, 2020.
African Americans and Caucasians use substances at about the same rate, but we don't get arrested at the same rate. We get arrested 3 and 4 times as much.
Later in the program, WFHB News Director Cade Young breaks down last night's second and final governor's debate. More election coverage in today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Better Beware, your weekly consumer watchdog segment. But first, your local news brief.
From WFHB, this is the local news brief for Wednesday, October 26th. I'm Aaron Comforti. The Indiana State Department of Health reported just under 2,600 new COVID-19 cases today. That's the state's third highest count on record. Indiana is averaging about 2,400 new cases per day, which is the state's record high, and about 24 deaths per day. That means that at this point, about 1 in 100 Hoosiers who gets COVID will likely die from it. COVID-related hospitalizations remain at their highest levels since mid-April. Right now, there are about 1,700 Hoosiers hospitalized because of COVID-19. Locally, Monroe County recorded about 50 new cases. That's the highest number in a month and a half. Surrounding counties saw between 2 and 30 new cases. In an email to WFHB, Indiana University Director of Communications, Dr. Chuck Carney, confirmed the university's so-called new positive test results term corresponds with the more common new positive cases term. As such, this morning, Indiana University Bloomington reported 99 new cases of COVID-19 in the past week on its Bloomington campus. That's a slight uptick from last week. And the 2020 Fall Fun Drive continues today at WFHB. WFHB broadcasts its local news shows 4 times a week, Monday through Thursday. But we need your support to keep this programming going. To donate, go to WFHB.org and click the red donate button or call 812-323-1200. That's 812-323-1200 to donate or become a subscriber by phone. A WFHB supporter has kindly offered to match your donation dollar for dollar, and a generous donation of $72, for example, funds 1 week of the WFHB local news. Stay safe, and thank you for supporting community radio. I'm Aaron Comforti.
The Monroe County Community School Assistant Superintendent Dr. Marque Winston presented a Supporting the Whole Child update during the October 27th school board meeting. She mentioned the need for mental health responsiveness heightened due to COVID-19.
That we are using to strengthen our ability to be responsive to all of the needs of our students. That means the academic needs, the behavioral needs, the social-emotional needs, their physical health needs, their hunger needs, their needs for mental health, all aligned through a lens of equity.
Winston reported every MCCSC school has implemented the Whole Child program. Family Case Manager Supervisor Brian Turner of the Indiana Department of Child Services said reports of child abuse have dropped by 43%.
Teachers, administrators, social workers, counselors, and other school staff are our community's best assets for recognizing and reporting child abuse and neglect. From February 2020 to April 2020, our regional area, which consists of Monroe, Brown, Morgan, Owen, and Lawrence counties, experienced a 43% drop in reports of child abuse and neglect. The drop in reports were unprecedented and directly correlated to schools being shut down early this year.
Turner stated the drop in reported cases resulted in a drop of investigations. He reported by June, cases had doubled. He mentioned case manager claims of increased mental health needs for children.
At this moment, the state of Indiana retains custody of roughly one out of every 50 MCCSC students. Caring for so many of our community students provides us with a level of insight that can't quite be quantified. Case managers have seen what appears to be an increased rate of depression for children in our care, specifically from the ages of 11 to 18. When asked, a child suffering from depression will more often than not say to us that it is because they are not being able to socialize with their peers in the way they were before. A new development seen over the past 3 to 4 months has been an increase in the transfer of parental obligations and an emotional responsibility for the parent between the parents and the child, or parents and children, excuse me. As this period of social isolation continues, some children are placed in the role of decision makers for the household, co-parent to their siblings, and or primary emotional support to their very own parents.
However, Turner reported July and September saw a 25% increase of reports, still below the average percentages from last year. Lakeview Elementary Principal Angie Evans said 3 tiers of support would provide students with differing intensities of mental health instruction. Also during the MCCSE School Board meeting, Assistant Superintendent for Human Resources and Operations, Dr. Andrea Mobley, said 12 out of 23 buildings with in-person learning have no reported COVID-19 cases.
To our knowledge, we do not have a situation where a positive individual has transmitted to another student or staff member in a classroom. But we've not seen it transmitted between students, from a student to a teacher, teacher to a student. We just have not seen that to our knowledge in any classroom up to this time. And we're hearing that also from our local health officials. We're hearing that from the state health officials that we're not seeing the transmission in school.
Mobley said any transmission most likely occurred in gatherings outside of school.
Monroe County Commissioners heard a final validation report presentation on pretrial reform Indiana. Assistant Chief Probation Officer Troy Hatfield presented pretrial reform goals during their October 27th meeting.
There are 3 main goals of pretrial reform that we focus on. Those are maximizing the release of pretrial defendants, maximizing safety, and maximizing court appearance. So in keeping those 3 things in mind, we really worked to set up our local system on how we were going to do things.
Hatfield said the program began 4 years ago. He stated over 8,000 pretrial defendants were assessed.
In Monroe County, an overall appearance rate of about 93%, meaning that of all the hearings a pretrial defendant has during their pretrial period, of all those hearings in the past 4 years, they have been attended or defendants have appeared 93% of the time. In terms of a safety rate, and what I mean by that is not having any new arrests during the pretrial period, you'll see that our overall kind of safety rate is 79%, but our low-risk defendants appear for court 96% of the time, and 91% of the time are never rearrested for any new offenses during that pretrial period of time. And then you also look at one of the other metrics we follow quite closely locally is our overall detainee length of stay. And you can kind of see how that falls in terms of the length of the stay in days in jail.
Hatfield said the assessment looked at the defendant's criminal histories, employment, residential stability, and substance abuse. Researcher and professor Dr. Evan Lauder reported good predictive validity for any arrest, new arrest, or failure to appear in Monroe County.
Individuals who are high risk relative to low risk have a 7 times greater likelihood of any FTA. Individuals who are high risk have a 17.56 times greater likelihood of any arrest relative to low risk defendants. And individuals who are high risk relative to those who are low risk have a 6.61 times greater likelihood of any new arrest. You see that those effect sizes are essentially tempered a little bit for moderate to low risk defendants, but still, I mean, good predictive accuracy and exactly what we would want to see in kind of assuming that moderate risk defendants are at higher risk of failing on during that pretrial period relative to low risk, and the same for high-risk defendants relative to moderate risk.
Lauder stated the risk assessment had similar positive changes for both Black and white defendants. She reported the levels for release within 3 days evened out between both demographics. Lauder said disparities also shrank in the average number of days in pretrial detention.
Essentially, what we found is that defendants who were administered a pretrial risk assessment had a greater likelihood of release. That release typically came without financial conditions and in a shorter length of time. We found little evidence that there was a disparate impact of risk assessments by race. In contrast, Black defendants who received a risk assessment had 71% fewer days in pretrial detention compared to that pre-pilot comparison period, and white defendants experienced a 40% reduction.
Hatfield encouraged a decrease in the use of bind release conditions. He said further research would look into pretrial sanctions and incentives, graduated supervision in pretrial, and criminal justice.
The Ellettsville Town Council approved the creation of a Coronavirus Aid Relief and Economic Security Act fund for payroll reimbursement. Clerk Treasurer Sandra Hash spoke during their October 26th meeting.
You know, the CARES grant started out to pay for PPE and any expenses we incurred, but for whatever reason, the rules changed, and they said it was to reimburse for our public safety work that had to work during the shutdown.
She mentioned the total amount was approximately $216,000. Hash said the fund would be temporary and monies would be redistributed to the general fund.
Now it's time for your feature reports. Up first, last night was the second and final governor's debate in Indianapolis. WFHB News Director Cade Young breaks down three topics of debate: the coronavirus vaccine, racial justice, and legalized marijuana. We turn to Cade Young for more.
On Tuesday night, the Indiana Debate Commission hosted the second and final governor's debate. Republican Governor Eric Holcomb, Democratic candidate Dr. Woody Myers, and Libertarian candidate Donald Rainwater sparred over a range of issues, including police reform, the coronavirus vaccine, and legalized marijuana. The debate was moderated by Nadia Brown, an assistant professor of political science and African American studies at Purdue University. One topic of debate was the distribution of a coronavirus vaccine if it becomes available to the public. Governor Holcomb said he would not back a mandatory COVID-19 vaccine.
Well, it shouldn't be mandated, but it should be encouraged when it's safe. And it will have to go through the proper approval from the federal government. And we look forward to working with them. And I'm encouraged by things that I read about therapeutics and vaccines that could roll out in the near term. We want to make sure that we're ready to rock and roll when it does come to Indiana, getting it out to the front line, getting it out to the most vulnerable, getting it out to our schools and long-term care centers, etc.
Dr. Myers did not say whether he supports a mandatory coronavirus vaccination, but he did say he hoped one would be available soon.
You know, vaccines overall are some of the most cost-effective and important investments that we've made as a society, and they have just proven to be lifesavers over 100 years. We know that today is no safe and effective vaccine approved for COVID-19, but I'm hopeful that when a Biden-Harris administration takes office and we have a new CDC and FDA director, that one will be forthcoming. I know that they'll look at the research and they'll follow the recommendations of the manufacturers and carefully look at any restrictions so that there may be some patients for whom the vaccine is inappropriate and therefore wouldn't be recommended. So we don't know the full side effect profiles yet. We don't know all of those restrictions, but they're going to be coming. And who to prioritize, healthcare workers, those with pre-existing conditions. And in Indiana nursing homes, that's where we're going to have the supply go to first, because that's where the most risk will be.
Rainwater said it should be up to the individual to decide whether they want to receive a COVID-19 vaccine.
and it must be a citizen's responsibility to determine what level of risk they're willing to take, what level of risk they are willing to put their children under, and government should not be involved in that decision.
On Tuesday, the Indiana State Department of Health released an interim draft of its plan to distribute the COVID-19 vaccine whenever one becomes available. The draft plan would prioritize healthcare workers in addition to vulnerable groups such as people over 65 years old and those with underlying conditions. A highlight of the night was centered on a question from Nadia Brown on racial justice and police reform.
Our next question is on the topic of racial justice. Racial justice has reemerged as a political topic, particularly after George Floyd's death this summer in Minnesota. What is the role of government to address and eliminate racial disparities?
Dr. Myers mentioned the death of George Floyd in the protests that followed. He called for body and dash cams for police, a review of police academy training, and bias training for police officers.
This is a big issue. We saw the demonstrations of the vast majority of them peaceful this summer as a result of the George Floyd murder. We know that we need criminal justice reform. We need body cams and dashboard cams in every vehicle. We need that that footage uploaded to the cloud. We need bias training for all of our officers as a routine part of their training. We need oversight of that very small percentage of officers that don't follow policy where accusations have been made. You know, the vast majority of our officers do exactly as they're supposed to, and they know that this small percentage is hurting the reputations of the profession. And yes, we do need decriminalization for simple possession, and we need to make sure that we legalize medical marijuana in the state and apply our laws fairly and equally. We know today that African Americans and Caucasians use substances at about the same rate, but we don't get arrested at the same rate. We get arrested 3 and 4 times as much.
Governor Holcomb said he would appoint a cabinet-level position of inclusion, opportunity, and equity, which drew pushback from the other candidates.
Simultaneously, after the election, I will appoint the first ever cabinet-level chief officer of inclusion and opportunity and equity, the CEIOO. That's a mouthful. But they will be in charge of making sure that we remove any barriers, that we remove any hurdles and address those gaps. Economic empowerment will go a long way, but we need to be looking at housing, transportation, health outcomes, all the above, including our training, the ILEA, the way that we train our officers, and we will have body cams come next year.
Rainwater argued a cabinet position is not necessary. He said he would expect all department heads to promote diversity and inclusion.
The governor of the state of Indiana should be personally responsible for making sure that state government is inclusive and is not derisive. He should not be hiring a commission to come in, spending your tax dollars. He should not be adding bigger government, a new cabinet position, somebody else who can do part of his job for him so that he doesn't have to do it. He should be doing that himself.
Dr. Myers also disagreed with Holcomb's appointment of the position. He said he would make sure all state departments promote fairness and equity.
I don't want the state to hire a CEIOO. I'm going to make sure that all of my agency heads have this at the top of their agenda from day one, in addition to accomplishing the goals for their agency. Perhaps my opponent needs someone to help him understand the issues of fairness and equity. I've lived in this state for many years. I've been under siege on occasion because of race. I understand what fairness and equity is all about, and it'll be a priority for my administration to make sure that we have all of the fairness and equity that the state can get.
The Indiana Black Legislative Caucus has offered other methods to address racial justice and police reform. In a press conference 2 months ago, the IBLC said they want more community policing and to take police officers out of schools. A Chalkbeat analysis of state data found that school police are 2.5 times as likely to arrest Black Indiana students than white students. Both Myers and Rainwater agreed to relax the state's marijuana laws. According to the American Civil Liberties Union, quote, Black people are 3.64 times more likely than white people to be arrested for marijuana possession, notwithstanding comparable usage rates, end quote.
We can start by decriminalizing cannabis and getting people out of jail and out of prison who are simply there because they possessed a plant. We can also start being more aware of the disparities in regulations and laws that adversely affect minorities and minority opportunities.
Dr. Myers said he supports the decriminalization of marijuana, and he also supports medical marijuana.
My position on this has been very clear from the beginning. It is time to decriminalize simple possession of cannabis in the state of Indiana. It makes no sense to be on the border between Indiana and Illinois and walk across the border and become a criminal. It's also time for us to legalize medical marijuana in Indiana. That's going to be a big step for our state, but it's an important one that it's now time to take. You know, I've read the literature carefully, and I know for a fact that there are conditions that respond to the cannabinoids, which include CBD and THC. And it's time to allow Indiana physicians to be able to prescribe those substances for their patients. It's also time to make sure that our veterans are getting substances that they need, the THC that they need in order to treat PTSD and some of the other complications that they've suffered as a result of their service to our nation. It's time for Indiana to change.
Governor Holcomb does not support legalizing marijuana, citing that cannabis is currently illegal on the federal level.
I have been very clear and consistent from the very outset in 2017 with this, when this issue first came up. I mentioned that I've taken a couple oaths in my lifetime, one when I was in the United States Navy and another when I was sworn into this office. I don't have the luxury of picking and choosing which laws to legalize at the state level while they are illegal at the federal level.
Rainwater strongly disagreed with Holcomb. He said he supports legalizing marijuana for recreational use as well as medical use.
First of all, let me make one thing really, really clear. What you've heard from the other two candidates in a nutshell is we want to reward Big Pharma with medical marijuana and keep it from the citizens of Indiana. And that's wrong. It's plain wrong. We have an economic crisis in our state, and we have the ability to create new agricultural, manufacturing, and retail opportunities for Hoosier business owners just by legalizing and decriminalizing cannabis. And any other discussion about needing to research something that's been around for decades is just misinformation and frankly, should be insulting to every Hoosier.
Recreational marijuana is now legal in Indiana's neighboring states of Illinois and Michigan. According to the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug under the Indiana Criminal Code. Other Schedule I drugs include heroin and LSD. A recent poll showed that Governor Holcomb was ahead with 47% of the vote, Dr. Myers at 29%, and Rainwater trailing at 15%. The poll comes from a Washington, D.C.-based pollster and was published on Tuesday ahead of the debate with a 4 percentage point margin of error. Debate moderator Nadia Brown covered a range of other issues with the candidates, including sexual assault, infant mortality, the economy, redistricting, and broadband internet. To watch the full debate, go to WFHB.org. Reporting for WFHB News, I'm Cade Young.
Now it's time for Better Beware, your weekly consumer watchdog segment hosted and produced by Richard Fish.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
First thing today, a quick heads up on voting. Next Tuesday's Election Day, and if you're voting by mail, you're almost out of time. Your mail-in ballot needs to be received by noon on Election Day or it won't be counted. If you haven't received it yet, you'd better choose another method, because once you've mailed a ballot, you can't vote in person. Early voting is going on right now down at Election Central in Bloomington, just off the square on West 7th Street. But a friend of mine went by there and reported long lines down the block. So if that's your choice, be prepared to stand around outside for quite a while. If you're voting in person, and that's what I'm doing this year, make sure you know where to go. Polling places can change. Mine did. Last spring, my precinct voted in a church, but this fall, it's in one of the middle schools. You can find out online at indianavoters.com. And remember, that's voters, plural, because without that final S, you go to a fake website. Turnout's expected to be heavy this year. If you can go mid-morning or mid-afternoon, you'll probably have a shorter wait. Be sure to wear a good mask. That's a requirement this year. And it's a very good idea to bring some tissues and hand sanitizer with you. They may have them at the polling place, but it can't hurt. You might also want to bring your own pen, because in Monroe County we have paper ballots that you mark up, which get read by a machine. Safety first, but whatever you do, make sure you do vote. What with all the election hoopla, plus the COVID-19 pandemic, fraudsters are working overtime right now. I've been getting fake emails that seem to come from somebody I know, somebody whose email contact list has been hacked, and they usually contain a link to click. I've been spotting them and deleting them. Fake emails that appear to come from a neighbor about yard signs have been reported, too. Never hesitate to use antique technology, it's called the telephone, to call your friend and ask about an email if it even seems like it might be fake. And I use a website called Dropbox to store and send files. They occasionally send me notifications, and people who post or receive things can send notifications through Dropbox. Well, so can scammers. I got one the other day from Collins Adoni, I never heard of him, her, or it, that said I'd been sent a finance report. It gave me a link to click to view transfer. Oh yeah, right. I saved it just long enough to tell you about it, and then flushed it down the digital sewer. Better beware, more than ever. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Aaron Comforti and Sydney Foreman in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Cade Young.
Better Beware is produced by Richard Fish. Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. Our executive producer is Cade Young. For WFHB, I'm Sydney Foreman.
And I'm Benedict Jones. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for the Transmission Times. That's coming up next on WFHB Community Radio.